Welcome to episode 44 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, the unmutable Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And from his world-spanning, scoop-breaking ventures out in the field, we brought back your all-day cowboy, one of the original trinity of Comic Book Nation. Brandon Davis is back here on
the couch. I also love Comic Book Nation.
I love that as well.
Did I say Comic Book Nation?
He totally did.
Oh, but hey, I mean, listen, it's going to be a slip. Taking this show to new heights.
That's the second show in a row that I've let something sit.
Wow.
And the other host brought it up.
Announcing our new spinoff podcast for late night.
Available now in Denver.
Yeah. In Denver, Washington State,
Portland.
Coming soon to New York. But in all seriousness, this is Comic Book Nation, and if you want to combine it with your own podcast, I'm sure that helps our numbers. But today we're going to be talking about a couple of exciting things, and weirdly enough, well, we changed some things up, but I had like an all Spider-Man tied podcast. Everything I had tied back to Spider-Man in some kind of way.
All went to crud.
Yes, well, it did go to crap because we had a big announcement before we just walked in here, which is that Superman Henry Cavill is getting into another big geek genre role. He's playing Sherlock Holmes. So let's just start there. Why not? Let's just throw out the plan and just get wild. I mean, this is episode 44. So
yeah, 44, man.
Why not believe we made it that far.
Right?
Neither can I. And we're still not canceled. It's great.
Or sued.
But where were we at? Or sued, yeah. That is another one.
Yeah.
But yes, Henry Cavill is playing Sherlock Holmes in an upcoming adaptation of the Enola Holmes series. If you're not familiar with this book series, it is by Nancy Springer. And Enola Holmes is Sherlock Holmes' younger sister. And to play Enola Holmes in the series, we're also getting another big casting. Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things fame and Godzilla 2 infamy is going to be playing Enola Holmes. So this is another kind of iteration of the Sherlock Holmes brand that we're going to be getting. We just had this breaking news, so I didn't have my homework. Is this a TV show or like a movie? I guess those are basic questions that I should probably answer as the host.
I don't actually know. I didn't see that part of it. I mean, I am excited for this, mostly because I think Cavill's been. Is it okay? Can we address? Is it Cavill or Cavill? Because I've heard this like multiple ways
in
the office.
Cavill.
Is it Cavill? All right.
Is it Zendaya?
Oh, it's Legendary. So I'm assuming it's a movie. Okay. Enola Holmes.
But I'm very excited about this because, I mean, one, we're gonna get him as Geralt in The Witcher. Very excited for that.
Cool.
And now we're gonna get him as Sherlock Holmes. I'm a Sherlock Holmes. Like, it's kind of like Robin Hood. Like, I'll go see that regardless of what it actually ends up being. I just hope for the best. This actually sounds like it might be fun.
Yeah. And I love having, like, I want to be Henry Cavill's agent who, like, is just like, look, these geeks just keep dropping money. Like, here's how we're going to get this next money. Superman money.
Yeah, but my problem,
spy,
my only problem
they're not giving
with
you James
this.
Bond? Fine, we got the man from Uncle money. Now we're getting Witcher money.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he did that.
My only problem with this, and I'm sure it'll be great, is that Henry Cavill continues to do everything except play Superman.
Well, I know. That's not on
him,
though.
But that's not his fault.
That's Warner Brothers.
I know. Well, it's frustrating.
It is frustrating.
It's very frustrating. Like,
I'm not mad at Henry Cavill for it.
Yeah.
I'm just mad in general.
Like, you're going to get me Charlie. You're about to give me Charlie levels of triggered right now about this. Yeah, I feel some kind of way because I'm a Man of Steel, like, defender.
Same.
I liked Henry Cavill as Superman, like, and the fact that he's just been kind of screwed out of that career, it really does boil my blood. Even if you didn't like Man of Steel 2, I don't think there were very many people who ever argued that you couldn't take Henry Cavill, put him in the hands of another director for Man of Steel 2, and give us a good Superman movie. So
let Chris McQuarrie make a Man of Steel 2. Let Matthew Vaughn make Man of Steel 2.
Matthew Vaughn, I was sold as soon as
but
I started
But that's not happening.
That.
But it's not happening.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Sherlock Holmes.
So if I get
Matthew Vaughn on a Sherlock Holmes movie with Henry Cavill, that'd be freaking awesome.
I do like that they're taking this way, though, because there is the looming, Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes sequel.
And on top of that, Sherlock
or
is still popping. And on top of that, Elementary became a very successful
but
show.
I love all those things because they're all a little different. Yeah, they're all
a little different. It's like somehow we're not like overloading on Sherlock Holmes, and this is another great way to get in the franchise, like you said. And Millie Bobby Brown is a star, so I know she will nail this. And the thing about Henry Cavill that's so good is, like, he's a great action star. I mean, the man looks like he stepped off a superhero mold when he's been hitting the gym
and doing that. Mission Impossible.
Great. And, like, the jawline.
He's great in Man from U.N.C.L.E. too. Say what you want
about
the movie.
And that's the point.
He's great.
In Man from U.N.C.L.E., he's also, like, so charmingly British when he wants to be.
Yep.
Like, and that's what he was in Man from U.N.C.L.E. So to see him play Sherlock Holmes, I mean, he has that charm too. So like,
I'm interested who Watson's going to be.
Yeah, yeah. As always, we want to know more.
John C. Reilly.
And what's his name? Oh,
no, yeah, no, I was like, is it really?
I can't. I would like to see who, if they include what's his kind of love interest, his name, Irene or whatever her name is, the thief that he yeah. loves. Like, if she was in there,
the one who Amy McAdams played.
Yeah, Rachel McAdams yeah, played.
Rachel,
yeah.
sorry.
Like Eileen Adler or whatever her name is. I forget her name, but if
I think you had it.
I just trust nothing because then I listen back to the podcast and like 50 people coming for me.
Zelda 2.
Yeah, Zelda 2, right. So, all this sounds interesting. So, I mean, that's a good start. And like you said, a good way back into the Sherlock Holmes franchise. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And congratulations, Henry Cavill, on another casting. Please let this man play Superman sometime again, sooner before later, before I'm geriatric. Thank you.
We're getting old.
Moving on. Speaking of geriatric. We got a new trailer for Charlie's Angels today. Matt, the level of excitement in your face right now.
I'm so pumped.
And the fact that I actually probably need to re-watch this trailer again is why I'm going to let you go first and kind of talk about how you felt about this.
Oh, well, I mean, I've ever since they announced the cast, I've been very, I've anticipated this. Mostly because also, too, Elizabeth Banks. This is her directorial debut, but she has a level like of projects that she's involved in. You're giving me a very quizzical.
Is it her first movie?
I thought it was her director debut. Is it not?
You continue. I'll look that up.
Okay, look that up for me.
I thought she did Pitch Perfect.
Is she direct those?
I'm not sure.
Or was she an executive producer?
I'll look.
Okay.
This is our most prepared show.
It really is, boy.
It really is.
Anyway, she is
directing. We're comicbook.com. Who's going to be the Elizabeth Banks expert at comicbook.com?
I mean, it would probably be me because she was Rita Repulsa in Power Rangers.
That's fair.
But,
yeah,
no.
She directed Pitch Perfect, she did. Too.
She directed them.
Okay. And Movie 43.
So this is not her directorial debut.
No, this is her biggest film yet.
This is
definitely her biggest film, yeah.
Well, but no, I mean, she even in the movies, though, that she just acts in, she has a level of comedy, of timing.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's great. So the fact that Charlie's Angel is in itself a action comedy, the past two movies I enjoyed, but were very much the level of comedic... writing, yeah,
it's Mick G. Yeah,
this when they announced her, I trusted that she would know how to implement that well. And the trailer's great at that. Like, it has some really fun action moments, unconventional ones, especially with Kristen Stewart, who I think will surprise a lot of people. It's already surprised a lot of people from the trailer. And then I am a huge Naomi Scott fan. I think she's going to kill it, especially in a more comedic role because the role she's taken so far have been kind of very confident, very assertive characters.
Did you like her in Aladdin?
Oh, yeah. I loved her.
She's great.
Awesome. Yeah. But that role too, right? That role,
she's
Kimberly.
Great.
She's very much like assertive, confident. This, she's playing completely against type, but I think she's going to be great. Like, it was fun. Like, I really just had a smile on my face.
Yeah, it was kind of like... It was kind of like Mission Impossible-y, mm-hmm. Woman from Uncle-y, like in a good way, kind of like a modern spy thing. But
stylish, but not over-stylized.
Yeah, and it had the thing that I like is like the charm of like Melissa McBride McCarthy.
We are knocking it out of the park.
I'm falling apart. I'm never going to make it to episode.
Is Carol 50. A Charlie's Angel now?
We are killing it today.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. She could be, by the way. Yeah, she could be a kick-ass Charlie's Angel villain.
She would beat all of them up.
That's what I'm saying. She'd be an awesome villain. Yeah. But Melissa McCarthy, like Spy, like the movie Spy, mm-hmm. This kind of charm, which was a great rated R kind of like spy comedy. This was unexpectedly good and really kind of fires me up for a new Charlie's Angels take. And I liked the first Charlie's Angels when we mm-hmm. came up. Full Throttle was one of the worst things I wanted to gouge my eyes out at.
About a year ago, did you think you'd be saying, I'm fired up for a new Charlie's Angels take?
No, but that's why I love cinema. You never know. The things you think you're going to be fired up for are crushing, soul-scarring disappointments, and the things you never saw coming turn out to be great.
Yeah.
And I love the take on Bosley as far as like Bosley being a rank and not a person, so they can implement Patrick Stewart as a Bosley, like, you know, Hansu is a Bosley. It's like, that's so cool because you have all these different personalities and not just one Bill Murray-ish character.
There's smart updates to the Charlie's Angel concept and like some kick-ass action. And the three girls look really good together. Kristen Stewart looks like she's going to walk off with this in some ways of being a real scene stealer. So that's going to be, that'll be good. Get her that Catwoman role in the Batman, you know.
Hey, man.
Just throw that grenade in the room.
Team Hutchins.
Let's keep it moving. Next one is just a PSA.
Just putting that out there.
This next one is just a PSA real quick. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is now on Netflix. We talked about that movie when it came out. I can't say enough good stuff about it. Spider-Man Far From Home, we will be reviewing that. I probably should have mentioned that at the top of the show. We will be reviewing spoiler-free Spider-Man Far From Home, but you probably knew because you clicked on it and it's the title of this episode. So here we are.
Are we positive that Into the Spider-Verse is out? I just want to make sure with our run so far. I want to double check and make sure that right.
I mean, our article is titled Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is now on Netflix. How much can we clickbait ourselves? Like, I don't know.
Do we haven't been on the ball yet?
It's out.
Good deal.
So it's good to know. If you're hyped for Spider-Man Far From Home, which we will be spoiler-free reviewing in a minute, but you can't wait and you need something and you missed. And if you did not see Spider-Verse, and I know the worldwide total, so I know not everybody listening saw that movie.
For real.
Check it out and be willing to say, like, man, I should have caught this in theaters. Because while it's going to be great and I'm going to be at home with my kids watching it on Netflix, I mean, this definitely was one to catch in the theaters in 3D. It was really like a comic book come to life. And one of the best Spider-Man stories, hand down, across any medium I've seen ever told. Be sure to check out Spider-Verse. What are you guys' impressions now that we've had some months in separation from this movie?
Okay, Spider-Verse?
Yeah.
It didn't make enough money.
No.
Like, I mean, for as good and well-received as that movie
winning
was.
Winning Oscars, yeah.
It didn't make enough money. I don't know why either. Like, why do you think it didn't perform?
I think there was a lot of saturation in the winter and fall seasons with a lot of big movies coming out. And I think this one was the dark horse that people, like, I didn't think this was going to be a good movie until I started seeing film Twitter reactions to people saying they cried and it was the best and it deserves Oscars. And I was like, what? And I went out and saw it and I was like, okay, like, yeah. But it was a dark horse. Like,
I also think it's hard to sell animated comic book movies.
Yeah.
It's look at how many great animated DC movies there are. They don't fly off the shelves, you know? So I think that's a factor.
Yeah.
And like, but it's a great film.
And this one was so unique. Like, this was different. Like, you actually had to commit. Like, this wasn't... We're so ingrained to see, like, Marvel and DC movies and stuff. Like, yeah, like BD's saying, this was an animated movie. It was done in this really kind of crazy style. And, like, a Spider-Man that people don't necessarily know in the mainstream. Yeah. I mean, this is Miles Morales' attempt to break into the mainstream.
It's just crazy because they did everything right as far as, like, that art style was so bold and different from everything else. Like, I can't think of something they did wrong.
But that's like, the price of trailblazing. Yeah. Like, trailblazers are rarely rewarded as highly as everybody else who copies them thereafter. Like,
that's true.
Now that people saw Spider-Verse and saw how you can literally make a comic book come to life and do that, you know, the next few people will probably make a lot more money with it.
And then they can also reference, oh, hey, remember, everyone missed out on this.
Yeah.
Go see ours because you...
Exactly. Yeah. And that's just the way it happens. I mean, it's so hard to describe. Like, until I sat down, people were telling me about it, but until I sat down and actually saw it, like, I couldn't understand what they were trying to describe fully. Not in full measure. Like, when you actually experience it, it's so cool. But, yeah. So now you have the chance.
It was successful
Netflix.
Enough that we're getting a...
Sequel and spinoff. Oh, Spider-Ham's a star. I mean, he's around my house right now, and my kids love Spider-Ham. So
I just hope the third Spider-Man movie is Spider-Man bringing home the bacon feet Spider-Ham. Get it?
I will. Gosh. Yes, I do. And one, I will go see that in a heartbeat. It's Spider-Ham.
Weren't you the guy who Spider-Man? Laughed about Chewie eating porgs, though?
I wish Chewie would have...
that was really funny.
More porgs. I wish the lightsaber ignited and went straight through the porg.
All right, so check out Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse on Netflix if you haven't experienced it. Another PSA we have is from Matt, who's going to be taking us over to WWE for some important announcement.
Yeah, WWE floored everybody today by announcing that they're going to have Paul Heyman... who many will know from being the advocate of Brock Lesnar on current TV, but also one of the masterminds behind ECW, a classic imprint of wrestling. And then also Eric Bischoff are going to be essentially executives for the two brands. So Paul Heyman is going to be an executive on Monday Night Raw, and Bischoff, I don't know if you know who Eric Bischoff is, but essentially one of the masterminds behind when WCW rose to power.
Yeah, that's why I know
down
the name.
WWE.
That's why I know the name.
And, you know, all the Monday Night War stuff and Nitro and bringing over Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, all that stuff is, you know, I'm not saying like he's the sole reason. I'm just saying he's a big part of it. So, and then he's also been part of WWE in the past for small stints, and all of those have been entertaining. So he will be the executive for SmackDown Live. And they haven't like announced when that's going to kick in. But, you know, WWE's been struggling as far as certain storylines and keeping the hype for those shows and wasting some of their amazing talent. So people are very hopeful that these two, because they know the business, they know how to book themselves. They've done it already in the past and shown that if they get a hold of these and if Vince McMahon actually lets them, which is also a big
you know, if. That's yes. Mr. Micromanager.
Yeah, lets them actually make, you know, substantial decisions and kind of run with some things. And also, and Jim pointed this out earlier, and this is also a good point, if Bischoff avoids just bringing in a bunch of old stars, because ironically, that's what WWE's doing now, and that's not necessarily working. So if he can hold on that, not just go get Hogan or Nash or whatever and bring them in to do little poppy stuff, this could be really cool. So I'm very excited for this. This is a big deal.
All right. So That's what's going on in the WWE corner. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah.
All right. So stay tuned, because when we come back, we are going to give you guys a spoiler-free early review of Spider-Man Far From Home. So be sure to check that out.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right. That was an extra long pause. I think I just fell asleep there for a second. Spider-Man Far From Home. So this movie picks up after the events of Avengers Endgame. It is our first look at the MCU after all of those big changes. And it is also the sequel to Homecoming in a lot of ways, and takes a lot of those storylines that kind of began in that movie and continues them through this. We're going to start with Mr. Brandon Davis, who reviewed the film for us on comicbook.com, and tell us your impression, BD.
Good movie.
Awesome.
It's really, really good, man. I mean, I just think it gets better as it goes. Seen it twice now. I'm a huge Homecoming fan, which I know I've learned is less common than I thought.
Yeah, I was really confused. I thought you were not, but no, it turns out Matt's the secret hater.
I'm not a secret hater.
I'm the other big Homecoming fan in here.
I am a huge Homecoming fan. I think Homecoming was great. I think Homecoming did a really good job of balance, of showing Peter trying to balance the choice of being a hero or being a teenager, because being both is basically impossible. So this movie, he's already, as Samuel L. Jackson improvised, went to space, and he's fought with the Avengers, and he's been to Titan, he's done all these things, so it's harder to be a teenager. He really is Spider-Man now. But it does a good job of raising the stakes, making it bigger by traveling the world, balancing characters as individuals, not just as superheroes, and bringing in that decision of trying to be a teenager, but now it's not even a choice anymore. He's obligated to be a superhero, but he still is flirting with that choice because he wants to be with his friends. He wants to go on a field trip, and it's a lot of fun. These movies kind of take you back to high school in a way. I mean, not that we were swinging from buildings and being superheroes.
You weren't.
But just in the choices that you were making socially, you know what I mean? Yeah. And trying to find yourself and trying to find your friends and all that. Both of these movies have done that, and they've done it in ways that are fresh. None of it felt repetitive to me. And, I mean, also, I'm a huge Iron Man fan. So if you're a purist and you want Spider-Man's story to be what it is from the comics – you're going to get deviations that Tony Stark is basically Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
Yes, he's carrying a BFP suitcase. Uncle Ben died somewhere along the way. We don't see it. We're getting that treatment from Tony Stark. And I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it works. It's a remix of the story. I don't want the same story every time.
And it was also a major part of the 2000s Marvel comics. Like, Tony's mentorship of Peter mm-hmm. was, like, a big deal in those.
Yeah, and it works really, really well. And, I mean, at times, it does feel similar to Iron Man movies. But it does it, in a self-aware way that's not too heavy-handed. That
but
doesn't
why is
over-
that? Like, why does it feel similar? Is it because Happy's in it? Is it because that...
I don't want to spoil anything, but they outright bring in elements of Iron Man movies.
Okay.
Both... within universe and for the moviegoer,
okay,
that just make it feel like an Iron Man movie. Yeah. You'll know what I mean when you see the movie.
And there's an attention behind it because the story is about Peter, whether Peter can measure up to being Iron Man. And like, there's a lot of that kind of forces the story to kind of play. There are elements of the universe that come into play, but there's elements of just Peter's story of trying to live up to Tony Stark and the fact that Tony Stark has kind of given him this responsibility in more ways that you learn throughout the film that run deeper for Peter that he kind of has to live up to. And like Brandon said, is like his Uncle Ben almost. Yeah. And so it does. There are purposeful homages to Iron Man throughout, not just the character, but to the movies throughout this film.
So it's organic to the...
Yeah, it all fits. I think it all fits.
Yeah, no, it all fits.
I don't think it ever takes it away from being a Spider-Man movie.
It's very purposeful.
It's like, a Spider-Man movie influenced by the previous events of the MCU. Very heavily influenced. But I don't think it was more than other movies we've seen. I mean, the way Iron Man 3 was influenced by the Avengers, but it was still an Iron Man movie. I think that's a fair comparison. So, but all that said about him being an individual, not being a superhero, and all these other characters, Zendaya's great, Jacob Batalon's great, Tony Revolori's great. I think the movie is even more fun. And I love those parts a lot. But I think I even like the movie more when he is Spider-Man. When Spider-Man's on the screen, I feel like it's full speed and it's great. And Jake Gyllenhaal comes in as Mysterio instantly. One of my favorite MCU characters. He is great. Jake Gyllenhaal plays this role. There is one moment where it's so complex and his take on this character is just fully shown off and it's great. It just shows you what Jake Gyllenhaal can do. And he is great in the role. The costume looks amazing. The effects are great with Mysterio. And I think that I want to see more of him. I want to bring him back to the MCU. And I don't know if they're going to, but I hope they will.
Yeah.
And it's just a complete story. Start to finish, it's great. And then when it's done, you're like, wow, that movie was great. And then it gets better again because the post-credit scenes, I think, are the two best post-credit scenes in the MCU's history.
Wow.
Yeah, the two. Okay, yeah. Trying to build on that and avoid spoilers at the same time is a Spider-Man swing in and of itself. But yeah, I agree with a lot of what BD said. Far From Home, I like how it We are used to Marvel sequels having almost, it's like a legacy that almost every Marvel Cinematic Universe sequel, especially sequels to like really good first standalone films, mm-hmm. has to then do this thing of taking a character and putting them into the larger MCU in a way. And that can get really sloppy and really tricky. You can either have real bad kind of mess ups like Iron Man 2 in a way, or you can have real big successes like Winter Soldier, who kind of opened the door to a lot for Captain America and completely changed that franchise around from the first film. And like, yeah. So I think Far From Home does a pretty good job of doing that. I mean, there are so many demands from so many other Marvel movies. I mean, just the first act of this movie is literally just kind of clean up and bring you up to speed from Avengers Endgame. And explain in a way, like, almost hilariously hit all the points that like people have been asking.
Which I've heard is... some people approach as a negative. Did it come forced to you or no?
I mean, it was necessary because you have to reestablish. I mean, this film is part of a shared universe and that comes with obligations.
Yeah.
If after something like Endgame, which gets the freedom to end itself, like, boom, with so many unanswered questions, Far From Home has to do the work of picking up and basically being like, last time on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then being like, and here's the thing, and it... And it does. It does. And it does it in a funny, succinct way of kind of doing it. They don't just, it's not like, oh my God, exposition, like I'm going
to
die.
It's very similar to what Homecoming did about Civil War.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah, Homecoming handled
Civil
War
because
really
it never, it never, like BD said, it never, John Watts never gets away from grounding this into a high school experience. So we get kind of caught up on the MCU from the perspective of these Midtown Science students, which is hilarious because of the way they frame it and do it. It shows you all these major events and explains a lot of things, but it's from these teenagers' perspective, and it's really funny. So that's the way they get around that. But that's the obligations of the first act before you really kind of get out of the end of the first act and into the story in the second act. But like
it moves fast.
And it moves fast.
The first act moves fast. A lot happens in the first act, exactly. And then they're on a trip to Europe before you know it.
Yeah,
and it's over 2 hours long, and it goes fast.
And ironically, there's so much that there was in there in that first part that they cut out a whole bunch that they're actually making into a short film called Peter's To-Do List, which will be, we've confirmed, will be included on the Far From Home Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Because there's scenes you saw in the trailers, like even big action scenes that aren't in the film that are going to be kind of condensed into this story of how hectic it was for Peter Parker to get the hell out of New York and take a vacation. And this kind of conveys all that, but we got to get moving. So like it does kind of just shave off some of the prep and get you, because we got to fill in all the endgame stuff and get where Peter is and then get to Europe.
And I really have a feeling that going forward, I mean, this is the end of phase three, but it's the first post-endgame movie. This will be probably by far the smallest, and it's a global movie, but I think it'll be the smallest MCU movie, not because there are teases in this film for what's next, which you'll see, but also, I mean, even Black Widow, I think from now on, everything is just going to be huge. I don't think we'll see like Iron Man movies or you know, where it's just isolated to one location.
Steadily.
I don't think we can do that anymore.
Everything has to be an event for one reason or another.
Yeah, I really do think so.
Because whether it's a cultural event or a significant giant MCU event or something like
that. Probably the one character who could get away with it at this point, assuming that it's a post-endgame setting, because Wakanda is its own.
Yeah, but still, it has to be some kind of event.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they have to do something to pump it up, like with steroids now. Like, I mean, that's just where we're going.
It's hard to talk about this and make my points without spoiling anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I think at some point in phase four, they will probably, just because they're going to be most likely be building up some very obscure characters, I think they would kind of need to ground it in something smaller. I mean, I know some of the ramifications from this already.
We're not just talking about the film itself, but I'm talking about like the framing and marketing. Like, even if you just do Eternals, like Eternals is going to be an event,
but
with
Eternals
the amount of big names that they're going to throw at you.
Eternals is a very though big concept.
Yeah, exactly.
Well. But you're saying
Shang-Chi,
you're not going to get
won't
another
just be Shang-Chi.
And
it'll
Wasp?
Be the first Marvel movie with a majority Asian cast, Asian director, and that'll be.
So you're
like,
saying from a cultural perspective.
I said anyway they can spin it. It has to be an event. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there will still be some smaller.
Like nobody just said, hey, Captain Marvel is just a story that's coming out. Like, Captain Marvel was the first
female. No, but Ant-Man and the Wasp was like that. The first Ant-Man was like that. Like, there are smaller movies that you're just introducing.
Yeah, I'm saying I don't think we'll see just smaller movies coming around.
He's saying those are
going
to come to an end.
But I think they will.
More contained focuses.
I think you still will, because some characters kind of need that. They can't be introduced into a larger scale thing without getting lost. And if they're going to keep introducing,
I think characters like Namor or Nova or Shang-Chi will require good bits of focus and
like Shang-Chi.
But I think they're going to be big. I think they're going to find ways to make them big.
I mean, I'm in agreement with BD on this one. But just to finish up what I say about Far From Home, the one thing I have about Far From Home is, while BD liked the bigger scale and the world hopping, the kind of James Bondiness of it, like I actually prefer Homecoming and the smaller, intimate neighborhood Spider-Man story, because I really do attach to the more grounded high school kid in the neighborhood just trying to live life and balance this other identity thing about Spider-Man is what always spoke to me. And you don't lose that here. It just feels, it doesn't feel like it's as much of the heart and focus of it on the bigger scale of the world traveling.
Homecoming gave me one of my favorite MCU scenes, and that's the scene with Vulture and Peter in the car on the way to Homecoming. And the tension in that scene and the music and the traffic light changing on his face and just the everything about that scene, from how it was written to how it was acted to how it was shot to how it was composed, I thought was one of the best MCU scenes.
Yeah.
And that scene itself propelled Homecoming to an even better movie. I don't think Far From Home had that moment.
No.
I didn't have a scene like that. But as a whole, I have to go with Far From Home.
And it's hard to talk about all the strengths of it without spoiling, but rest assured, this movie does what it goes in the opposite direction for spectacle, and some of the spectacle is just like, you know, I mean, just really kind of mind-blowingly awesome.
It does, and it never takes you away from the story, though.
No.
That's why it works for me, because there are movies that will be just spectacle. No. You have Godzilla King of the Monsters comes out, it's all spectacle, and the substance doesn't work. The human stuff doesn't work, nobody really cares. And I liked Godzilla, but that's a 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5 movie, maybe 4 out of 5.
And that's kind of weirdly what, I mean, I think there is that moment, like the car scene in this film, which is kind of when we're heading into the third act, that uses the visual spectacle a lot. But like you said, I think why it maybe doesn't feel like the car scene is that was just grounded. I mean, that was just acting. Yeah. That was a power of Tom Holland and, more importantly, Michael Keaton kind of shining through.
I
think there is a great moment like that. That is this moment of, you know, doubt with Peter and stuff like that. But there's just so much visual spectacle that around, especially the first time, you're just trying to take this all in, like, holy crap, like, you know.
I will say the second time I watched it, man, it was, I had more fun watching it the second time because I wasn't sitting there. There is a huge unpredictable nature to this film. I mean, even as a comic book fan, you go in and you think you know what's going to happen, but they find ways to surprise even the big comic book fans who have expectations for certain characters. But watching it a second time, picking up on the Easter eggs, especially knowing the ending and knowing the post-credit scenes, picking up on the Easter eggs was one thing, but just being able to sit back and watch and enjoy the acting and the performances and the jokes and the action I liked it better the second time.
Yeah, and I could very well vouch for that. Like, yeah, once the pressure's off, because there are some really mysteries and things and surprises to wrap your head around, like getting just down into to appreciate the craftsmanship of it and how they kind of adapt and realize certain things from the comics, it's worth appreciating.
So we've gushed. Do you have any criticisms you can think of?
Just like I said, I think the setting of jumping from world to world, it's kind of the same thing. I forget, what movie were we just talking about where they did the same thing and I said it should have been? Oh, Men in Black.
Yeah.
It was Men in Black International. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, I think Homecoming got away a little bit more because it was still a very formulaic Marvel movie, but it got away with kind of like the intimate feel and the organic nature of like the comedy and the timing and the movement. But like this one felt more like set piece to set piece to set piece in that progression. Like, oh, we're at set piece 2, and then I know set piece 3 is going to be coming. And the movie's very kind of chopped up like that in the sense, like, because it's literally like, we're in this city, now we're going to get an excuse to go to this city, and now we're going to get an excuse to go to this city so we can fight this monster here, and this monster here. And it's very formulaic in that sense. So that just gave me some of the kind of when I began to know that I'm watching a Marvel movie feeling. So that was it. But like once I got into each set piece, like, and things started to happen and it became more intricate, like it actually was really good. And each set piece is memorable as opposed to Men in Black, which is so generic and kind of hollow that I forget half of where we went.
Yeah.
Like, I remember each set piece. Like, I remember what happened if Spider-Man's in the Netherlands or in, you know, Germany or in France. You know, like, I remember what each place was and memorable scenes. And not just action, but, like, character moments and funny moments from each place. And it is. And in a weird way, this is, like, Euro trip with a superhero focus instead of, like, a sex focus. But there is, like, a lot of funny kind of Euro trip style gags about the places and the kids being in the places and stuff like that. And so there was a lot of good stuff with that. And I wish there was, I liked Zendaya and Peter's story. Because of the nature of this story, I wish there could have been even more of that a little bit, because I thought they did a good job in playing a very different Peter and MJ dynamic than what we saw from Kirsten Dunst and Tobey Maguire, because Zendaya's MJ is so different, and also different than Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone.
Does Tom Holland just have instant chemistry with anybody on a set?
I think he's very charming and can do that. Like, yes.
Really? I mean, it doesn't seem, it's probably not hard to have good banter with Robert Downey Jr., but I mean, Zendaya, Jake Gyllenhaal, Jacob Batalon. I mean, you put him up against anybody.
Yeah.
And there's instant, like,
they, and his with Zendaya is so good because it's so awkward. Like, they're just,
yeah.
It's so funny because they're just two geeks, yeah. Like, trying to connect.
He has such a good little happy skip, too, when something happens. Like, he does it like three times, this movie. Yeah, they're. Yeah.
And so, like, I wish there was a little more of that, but I like where the story brings the two of them and that whole story, and I'd be really excited to see, especially, you know, oh, I can't say.
Yeah. Excuse me, no love for Vulture's daughter, Liz. How quickly Peter moved on.
No, oh, yeah.
They don't address her at all?
No, I asked John Watts about that, and he would love to bring her back. He wouldn't tell me whether she got snapped or not, but I was like, so did Liz get snapped out there? She moved to Oregon, right? And he said something along the lines of, like, well, if she didn't, then she could actually play a character her age because she was 5 years older than everybody in the first movie. So now she could just play her proper age, Laura Harrier. We'll see. Maybe I wouldn't be surprised if we see her again, because I imagine we're going to see Vulture again.
Yeah. I mean, so, I imagine we'll see Vulture again eventually.
Yeah.
And
Liz will come
so.
Back and she'll be like, wait, Peter, you're still 16. I just bought a beer.
Oh man, but
you can't even buy cigarettes.
So yeah, I mean, that'll be the thing. And the suits, I'll say the suits, I mean, there are four suits in this movie, but that's to sell toys. Like, there didn't need to be four suits in this movie.
Is there four?
Yes, there's four. There's the Iron Spider, the classic, the stealth, and the new black and red suit.
And there's also the original sweatsuit Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Sweatshirt Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah. So technically there's five. So I think, I mean, the suits are obviously merchandising gimmicks, and I don't think you needed four suits in this story, but, you know, whatever.
If the hardcore Spider-Man fans who both, like, especially the video game fans, there's a couple Easter eggs for them.
Oh, yeah. There's some great Easter eggs. Spider-Man game fans.
Not just, like, the recent one, but then older Spider-Man game, too. I mean, we'll talk about this.
Yeah, we'll talk about spoilers and Easter eggs and discussions. We're going to do a whole episode of spoiler discussions next week when you guys have all had a chance to.
And then on July 7th, we'll also have a special Comic Book Nation episode. It's a Sunday, but we're not allowed to talk about spoilers from interviews yet. But on Sunday, we'll have Kevin Feige and Amy Pascal. Full interviews are going to be up in one podcast.
Listen, man, when I've been telling you that Brandon Davis has been out there all day cowboying for us, we're not kidding. Like, we got stuff for you. Like, yeah, we have a whole special episode talking with the head, like, you know, Amy Pascal, head of Sony, Kevin Feige, head of Marvel Studios, and we're going to have plenty of juicy Spider-Man dish to talk about when we can drop full spoilers, so be on the lookout for that. All right, before we say too much and get too crazy, final thing I'll say is you absolutely have to sit through this movie. All the way to the end of the end.
Until they kick you out of the theater
and
they take
until the
popcorn.
Lights come on. I mean, they were trying to turn the lights on us.
Really?
Yeah, oh my God, yeah. And we were like, bro, what are you doing?
I walked out yesterday because we filmed fan reactions to it, and a couple people saw me walk out, and they, like, followed me because I guess they figure it's over, and I was like, guys, there's another scene. You're going to want to stay seated. And then they walked out, and they were like, oh, my God, thank you for telling me. That was so good. So,
they're
good.
Like, yeah, this is top-tier Marvel post-credit scenes. These are not wasting your time. Go and check those out. Because, I mean, if you want to know.
Oh, just stop. Just stop there.
Stop there. Stop there. That's the end. Yeah, that's the end until the spoilers discussion.
Good.
I almost went too far, but, like, yeah, that's the end. So, if you want to know more, be sure to check in our full Spider-Man Far From Home spoilers discussion coming up next week. All right, that'll do it for us here on Comic Book Nation. If you are just getting into this journey because you hopped on, you saw something like Spider-Man, be sure to just subscribe to us and make sure not to miss an episode. We post new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where we have an RSS feed you can subscribe to, or you can subscribe on your favorite listening platform, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Google Playlist, or tell any Amazon Alexa device to play Comic Book Nation podcast, and it'll fire it up for you courtesy of iHeartRadio. I learned that part. So you gotta really throw in.
Shout out to my Uber driver who promised to start listening.
Awesome.
Hey,
Uber driver. Yeah. If you guys leave us a great 5-star review on your listening platforms, let's just say iTunes. If you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, we will send you some comic book swag when we read the reviews on the air. And we have new Comic Book Nation official t-shirts. If you didn't see me wearing one in the last episode, yo, they are badass. Make sure you get one with just a 5-star review. That's all you got to do.
Mm.
So leave one. If you want to talk to us about anything we've been talking about, ask any questions about things like Spider-Man with, you know, spoiler free, hit us up at hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can reach us individually. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can hit me up at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Brandon Davis BD.
All right. Like I said, that'll do it for us. We hope you guys get out, have a good weekend, eventually see Spider-Man, and join us here for the full spoilers breakdown discussion. This is Comic Book Nation saying thwip, thwip. See you later.
Deuce.